Kayak anglers of the internet, welcome back to the Advanced Kayak Angler Podcast. Appreciate y'all tuning in. Kurt, what's up, man? Back from Lake Norman.
Lake Norman, yeah. Lake Norman kicked my butt this time. I have to say.
I hear you,
dude. I had a good day, though. So
it sucks so bad. Like I never want to come on a podcast like a week after I suck. It's like I don't want to talk about fishing this week. F fishing, you know. But it is what it is.
It is what it is, man. I mean, I still love that lake. I still love fishing for spots. I mean, it's a special lake. You know what I mean? There's a chance. There's big fish. There's a lot of fish, and there's big fish there. You know, it really. And it's a nice area, too. Just like going out to dinner is easy. Finding stuff, you know, Walmarts or whatever you need to go to is easy. It's not like. Everything's an hour away, like Dardanelle. You know, it seems like everything's an hour away there. But anyway, I don't think I was versatile enough is what I think happened. So I think this podcast is going to help me out.
There we go. Now, this man is good at podcasting. I'll go ahead and bring in the guests. We got Chuck Wise and Brady Storrs to talk about being versatile. What's up, fellas?
How you doing, man?
Been living the dream, buddy. All right, Chuck, you've been on here a bunch of times, but and co-hosting everything else. Tell everybody who you are, man.
Just a local guy. I fish
leading angler of the year, like usual.
Yeah, local. But I just like to fish. I fish a lot of, you know, our local region or local events over here in Alabama, you know, with Iron Cities like my home club, and you know, Coleman, those guys are cool. NACA, you know, don't want to leave anybody out, but there's a ton of them here. I fish, you know, regionally some, or you know, some, like if a national event comes by, I'll fish it. But I just love fishing. That's pretty much it.
That's right. Fished at Auburn in college, and fish have a PA with a he's a live scoper fanatic. With a bow mount motor, he's our resident live scope guru down here, and I also want to say for everybody who lives in the Alabama region, I want to give a plug for us. We've got our biggest tournament of the year coming up here in Alabama. It's on Smith Lake, April 27th, which is a beautiful lake. It's the right time to be there. It's before all the wake boaters get out. The fishing's going to be on fire. There's a lot of fish on Smith Lake. It's arguably the most beautiful lake in the state before the wake boats get out. Smith and Martin are two most super clear, beautiful, rocky, not much grass, but really beautiful lake. Nice place to be. Very scenic. But we've got it's a combined event between Iron City Kayak Anglers, Coleman Kayak Anglers, and our biggest club in the state, North Alabama Kayak Anglers. So that's like $40, $45 to enter. Plus there's a $20 MLF style side pot. So you can do like every fish you can catch. I'm not sure what the rules are for that yet. Plus there'll be a $105, $110 Alabama Kayak Anglers, AKA Tour. Alabama Kayak Anglers Tour event, which is like top-up events that go on top of local clubs across the state. Like last year, I was fortunate enough to beat Lance out for AOI because it's a challenge because you're fishing all over the state. So it's like, you know, $160-some, $70, $80, something like that. So last year, there was, 150 people? I mean, there was a lot. So it's a
– I thought we had like almost 80 last year. Like
was
for
it
the
80?
For okay. Yeah, and then for the ACAT, I think there was like 30, which is really good. I mean, like yes, Dan, you probably made more in that tournament than any other tournament you fished last year. But
yeah,
it's a fun tournament, a fun lake, deep clear spotted bass. Kurt, come on down if you want some redemption from Lake Norman. We got you down here.
Yeah, it's got
that the sounds spot. Tempting, man. Just hearing the big spotted bass sounds tempting. Hey,
it's fun. And you got two scopes, so that means twice the amount of fish caught, right?
it's amazing. That's exactly how it works. The two scopes on, you just start catching twice the fish. Hell, they got twice as big too, right?
All right, that's my plug for that event. I know, like, Last year we had some people like Josh Stewart came down from Tennessee. It was good to see him, but people from all over, man, this is, I don't know why there's such big Bassmaster and MLF style events go to Smith. I'm really surprised that, and they're such like, you know, fishing friendly place. I'm really surprised there aren't more people, you know, like there hadn't been a big kayak tournament there. There's a lot of launches. It's beautiful. It's big. I don't know. I love that lake. It really is pretty. So
yeah.
All right, Brady, tell everybody who you are, man.
My name is Brady. I also go by Stormy. I live in Nebraska in the middle of a cornfield, and I fish for bass while everyone else is fishing for walleye.
I like it.
And what? And he won TOC on Chick last year. He's very humble, but he is a daggum hammer. You hear about all these young guys that can catch all these bass. That's that guy.
I'm trying to keep up with all those young guys because those young guys are freaking studs. I'm like one of the older young guys because like Ewing and Jackson, they're even younger than I am, and they are ridiculous. It's like they fish on a different lake every time.
Bennett Nall, too. He was on last week, and he, got third at Norman, so that dude's legit.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real. All right, so tonight we want to talk about being versatile. I think first thing is give a sales pitch for being versatile, because I can kind of see it both ways where people, I think of like Jordan Marshall and, you know, some other guys who are less versatile but win more tournaments. I mean, you know, Jordan Marshall is one of the best kayak anglers in the country, and he's won more events probably than I've fished. I mean, he goes everywhere and fishes everywhere. So there is definitely something to be said for people who are very have their way, do their thing. Not that he isn't trying to get better. Jordan, don't get upset at me. I meant it as a compliment. But, you know, he is like Drew Gregory. He can do different things, but he fishes his exact certain way. That's his strengths. He fishes that way. What is a sales pitch for being versatile?
Man, I think that like those guys, like you just mentioned, Jordan, Drew, any of those guys, Russ, they have perfected their craft, and that takes a lot of time. So it's kind of like a Swiss Army knife, right? It's pretty cheap. And it does a lot of things pretty decently. And, you know, if you only want to cut down trees, then you need, you know, some kind of saw, right? But if you want to be able to cut down trees, maybe slowly, or, you know, cut a thread off your shirt, or use some scissors, that's where that Swiss Army knife kind of comes in. It's cheaper. And what I mean by that is you don't have to perfect your craft of like only fishing a jig or something. You put all your time into that. Yes, it will work and you will win tournaments doing that. But if you flip a jig in that lay down and then throw a jerk bait on that bluff wall and then, you know, throw a spinner bait for a little bit, like you have more, you can figure out the fish a lot faster, in my opinion. So that's kind of what the way I think about it is. It's really good to be versatile because, first of all, you can learn so many different things with being that versatile, right? You can learn, okay, I don't need to do it this way, but I can do it that way. And then maybe of your versatility search of like trying different things, you can say, well, you know, I'm just going to throw a spinnerbait down, you know, all day or whatever. And that could be your kind of segueing into your craft or, you know, honing your certain technique that you really love using. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot that can be said about being versatile, right? Because every day they're not going to need a spinnerbait, right? I don't know if that sold you anything or not, but that's kind of the way I think of it.
Ever since I was started kayak fishing, I've always wanted to be like the most consistent that I could be. And I feel like versatility is the way to be consistent. From, you know, just my experience, I always like to be up there in AOY threatening for that, 'cause I think that's the most prestigious award. And there's obviously people that get it done, like Marshall, that do one thing. But, you know, we go a lot of different places in the country, and a lot of them are a lot different. And you can't always do the same thing on every lake.
I feel like consistency really plays into what you just said, Brady, is that being consistent really plays into being diverse, because we are traveling to all these different lakes. There are a lot of different conditions. I mean, hell, sometimes even when we go to the same lake, the conditions are so different, it fishes completely different, right? I know for myself, not that I don't feel like I have some diversity, but I'm a finesse guy. I mean, I always fall back on it. I'm always throwing finesse, and that's great when I'm locked onto something, you know, and I'll be unbeatable. But then when you're not, things change quite frequently, you know. So being able to throw a spinner bait or top water, being able to make that adjustment from throwing, let's say, a finesse bait, we'll keep, just like you said, just keeps you more consistent over the diversity of the lakes that we go to.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, I feel like you can be a one trick pony as well, but also be versatile. You know, I throw a swim jig and I can fish that across the mat like a frog. I can swim it like a jig. I can Alabama shake it. I can fish on the bottom like a regular jig, you know. You don't have to be versatile in throwing a bunch of different lures necessarily, but like with your finesse fishing, if you get good enough at it and get your setup to where you can flip it in a tree, if you know, you're running down the bank and see a good looking lay down on your way to your next grass flat or whatever, then that's being versatile to me. So it's not necessarily knowing how to throw every lure ever created.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
Very true.
I was just gonna say, like, you can always fall back on like what you think your strength is, right? Like you said, your strength is finesse. So if you're, you know, you find something in practice and then just crushing a spook, well, tell you the tournament, every day is different. So like, more than likely, the stuff that you figured out in practice is going to change a little bit. Like the fish might still be there, but being versatile allows you, you know, if they aren't hitting the spook, you can try something else, right? Where if you get locked in on that spook bite, then you're just going to throw it all day and might only catch two or three fish. So, yeah, I mean, and like what Brady said is true. Not only should you be versatile with lures, but you also need to be versatile in how you use those lures. So there are certain lures that are meant to be versatile, like a swim jig. You could throw it in grass, wood, flats, clear water, dirty water. You can fish it in almost any condition that you can come across. There's a lot of other lures that kind of do that too. You know, spinner baits for sure. There's Brady, you're a spinnerbait master, I would say. You can play with your blade sizes according to, you know, different water clarities, or if you want it deeper or higher, or if you want to reel it slower, if you want that thump thump. You know, there's a lot of different ways to be versatile with only using a few different baits, for sure.
Yeah, that's when you can really get dangerous, because, you know, like if you are really good at spinnerbait fishing, and you've thrown it for so long that you know when different bites come up that aren't necessarily always there. So if you're fishing along and, you know, the sun is high, so the laydowns are casting a shadow, and you throw it in there and fish it like a jig, those fish have probably never seen a spinnerbait fished on the bottom and hopped. So just different things like that, just those little nuances. Being versatile, you know, with that lure and doing something others aren't, is what sets you apart and gets you the extra bite in the tournament.
Especially on those tough days, right? When everyone's out there, everybody's maybe it's not a big lake and everybody's hitting the same stuff. You know, I feel like what you just said can be like a major player. mm-hmm. fishing it a little different than everybody else. So I got a question for you guys. As anglers develop into who we are, you know, as anglers, when did you guys start in your mindset, start thinking like, you know, because we all start out with one lure that we like. And when did you like grow away from that and start branching out and saying, hey, I want to fish swim jigs. I want to fish spinner baits. I want to fish crankbaits. I want to fish them all well. Like when was that like that first like kind of like light bulb moment for you guys? Yeah. Or did it happen that way? I'm just curious, like, you know, how you guys kind of got into that.
Yeah, you go first, Chuck.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when I've been fishing pretty much all my life since I was like 5 or 6 years old. But when I remember like, or when I actually recall like fishing, I was throwing a black trick worm, just Texas rigged, and at this little local lake where I grew up. And you get to a point where you're just like, man, like you look at the fishing aisle, you're like, there's a whole bunch of lures. You get Bassmaster articles and you're like, wow, this guy's fishing with something that I've never even seen before. And you start reading and you start doing more research, and that just leads to, you know, oh, I'm going to pick up a square bill because Kevin Van Dam's just crushing him on a square bill. And I want to throw it through these laydowns that I've been throwing this trick worm through. And it just, you kind of go from like it definitely is an addiction for sure. And you just have to like scratch that next itch, and you see something cool and you just want to go out and try to do it. And then some stuff works and some stuff is just like, you know, maybe they'll save this for a rainy day, or, you know, that didn't work, but try it again later. And then I think those growing years when that is occurring, like when you're 13, 14, 15, you know, 16 years old, just start driving, you can finally get out on the lake and you don't have your dad telling you what to throw. Like, yeah. Throw a Texas rig June bug lizard, Chuck, it catches fish. I'm like, yeah, okay. But I want to throw other stuff too, Dad. And, but yeah, so I think that's where it kind of stems from, is just the curiosity of like, man, can I make this fish eat a different color or, you know, something else? Just, you want to be a little bit different. And another thing too, is like, you go to the kind of like these smaller lakes and maybe it's just not working one day. Like, oh, I remember this day I caught 40 fish on a black trick worm. Well, the next day I only caught 2, and I'm like, I need to try something else. So I think that has a lot to do with it. You just, if you have that fishing bug, you always want to get that next bite, and you'll do anything you can to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To just hit on your point of like, you're catching, if you catch 40 fish one day on a lure and catch 2 the next, there's now a necessity to, you know, change and get better in order to stay on them, because whether you're tournament fishing or fun fishing, you're fishing for fish, so that you want to go and wear them out. When I started to expand my lures and techniques is when I decided like I want to be able to win some of these tournaments, because, you know, I was competing against these dudes that were, you know, they just won all the time, and I wanted to do that. And I knew that I was, you know, I'd have to branch out and become more versatile to do that. And also, I started fishing regionally and nationally, and you're just not going to get it done out there if you're only doing one thing all the time. So that's, you know, mine kind of grew out of necessity, like what Chuck is saying, to just learn how to stay on them every day rather than have it just come around in a cycle, like catching trout in a pond where they just swim around in a circle and you got to wait for them to come back.
So what, I guess on the flip side of being versatile, I remember being, whenever I was just getting into bass fishing, it seemed pretty daunting. Like, there was so much to learn, line, reels, rods. If somebody's listening to this and they're just getting into bass fishing, like, what would you tell them on kind of the road to becoming versatile? Is there any kind of advice you'd give to them?
Yeah, I would go the opposite of being versatile. In order to be versatile and lock one thing in your hand. Just pick something and do it for weeks. And personally, I would start with a jig because I think that's the most versatile lure that you can throw. What would you throw, Chuck?
Texas rig. Jig or yeah. Texas rig. You know, if you get like a rage bug or, you know, some kind of small little 4-inch creature bait, it gets bites. And with that, you can even change your, you know, your weight. You can do 1/4 ounce to 1/2 ounce, you know, and, you know, you don't need a certain hook. You just need a stout one. You know, you can do EWG or straight shank. You know, when I started out fishing, it was like, oh, you got to have an EWG hook. So, you know, like if you think you need that, you know, try it. Like, I think we put a lot, you know, of, you know, justified research and all this stuff, right? Like there are certain hooks that are way better, but it, like what Brady's saying, just lock something in your hand and see if it works. And eventually you will, if you spend a whole week fishing a jig, you won't be an expert yet, but you will be on that right track to knowing when I need to throw it. It takes a lot of time on the water and, you know, we're talking to guys that are either in school or they're working full-time jobs. It takes a lot of time, right? But it is, every second on the water is worth it. You know, even if you, like, it's the summertime now. You got 4 hours after you get off till the sun goes down. Go out there, even if it's on the bank, and just throw something around. But yeah, sorry, I kind of went off on a tangent. Go ahead, Brady.
That's funny that you say it's summertime now when it's getting down to like 30 degrees here at night. That's horrible.
Well, it ain't summer where I'm at.
It's storming here. That's what happened to me. It knocked out the power.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
Is there another one coming?
No, it's okay.
We have a windstorm now.
Yeah.
So when you guys are talking about versatility and you say stick with one lure, I know, like, at least for me, when I started fishing, you know, I locked on to the Texas rig early. And for me, I just dove like so deep into it for like 2 years that I felt like I could do anything with that you could do with any other lure. Like I could put a swim bait on it. I could put a worm on it. I could put a creature bait on it. I could make them float. It could be small. It could be big. But the reality was, as I learned more, I thought it was like the end all bait, and it became very versatile to me and very useful. And I throw it a lot, but it's not, it's not a spinner bait. It's not a jig. It's not a bladed jig. It's not all these other lures. They all have their place. And when I kind of like stepped out of that realm, I spent years just like trying new lures. Like I like refused to use my Texas rig just so I could learn the crankbait, right? And I would just throw the crankbait. Like when you say for like a week, I would obsess about this stuff for like months, and like I would like force myself, and I'd be miserable sometimes. And that's one of the things people have to realize is that that's part of learning a new bait, is that you're going to be miserable some days with it. It's not, yeah. It's not going to be the bait, or you're not going to throw it right. You know? And I just thought that was such a key point with that you guys are putting out there, like put one bait in your hand and learn that bait, because it can become a very versatile bait no matter which one it is.
Yeah. I mean, like it's all trial and error. So like, even if you're not catching something, you're learning something. You're learning, like, something. Okay, I know when not to throw this thing now. You know, that's a big part of it, Kurt, for sure.
My big one that got me into bass fishing, because I grew up on the coast, was seeing Kevin Van Dam win behind the bridge on Lay Lake here. And my mother and father-in-law had a piece of land right by there, so we listened to it, you know, to the whole thing. So I had like red-eyed shad fever for 6 months. That's all I threw. Like it was, I threw that damn thing everywhere. You should not throw a lipless crank. And but
that's a super versatile bait, though.
Yeah,
I'm saying the same thing about a jerk bait, but you can throw that thing anywhere.
Yeah, I'm about as good as anybody can be with a lipless. So I might not be KVD, but there's not too many people in kayak fishing beat me with a lipless.
Um, So, like, when you guys, how often, like, let's say in a tournament situation, it's day one of a multi-day tournament, and what you thought your go-to isn't working, when do you make that decision to switch up? Like, how long do you give yourself with one particular bait? Is it 5 casts? Is it 10 casts? Or is it a feeling that you get?
That's like the question.
Should I stay or should I go?
Exactly.
Lots of time on the water is what teaches you that answer.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think you ever have the flat out answer for that. I think something inside of you has that answer in that moment. You can't know that until you're actually there and doing it, because I very rarely make conscious decisions on the water. I just keep moving and let my fishing experience take over.
Yeah. Sometimes I black out and I'm like, why am I going to this lay down right here? And then I'm like, oh yeah, to throw a jerk bait, and then I'll catch one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just throw a jerk bait and you'll catch one.
And then that's why that question is always so hard to answer, because it's like a feeling. It's just something you do.
Yeah.
It's not instinctual. Like, yeah, it's not a conscious decision, because I try to tell people that and they're like, but when? Like, is it do I do 10 casts and then switch? And I'm like, man, sometimes I do 100.
Yeah, sometimes I do one. Sometimes I'll throw it out there and be like, I'm not even going to try that, and I'll throw like something else.
I think you have to kind of know yourself too, though. Like, I know that I definitely lean towards the stay and make it pay kind of deal, which is usually not beneficial for me. Like, I do better whenever I'm moving. So I know that if I'm starting to think, oh, you know, maybe I should go somewhere else, I should have probably went somewhere else 10 minutes ago, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you have to question it, give yourself about 10 seconds to make a decision and stick with it. Like on a big change, it's like, you know, should I cross the lake over there? It's going to take me 30 minutes to get over there, because it's going to be in the back of your mind. If you're like, man, I should have went over there, and you didn't go over there, and that could ruin the rest of your day. Just thinking negatively can kind of ruin it. Even though you might be on the fish over here and you just need to try a different lure or presentation, if you think about, oh, I know they're schooling over there on that point or something, then it'll, yeah, that's kind of a toughie. And the most I've moved in one day was in like an 8-hour tournament, was like 3 times. And one time I got to the ramp and I didn't even put in, because I'm like, I'm not feeling it over here. And then I just hightailed it like 30 minutes away, like in my truck. So that's pretty stupid, but yeah.
One more technical way to go about that with how I kind of fish is, like, if I'm in an area and I've got, you know, I obviously have a fish finder and that jazz on my kayak, so I'm able to see fish and bait that way, but also visually seeing fish busting, seeing bait popping in weeds, anything like that. If I'm seeing sign of fish and I'm not catching anything on what I'm throwing, that's a really good sign to switch it up. If you're in an area where you're not seeing anything on your depth finder, you're not seeing bait popping, you're not seeing fish blow up, it's, you know, you might just want to move areas and keep throwing what you're throwing if you feel confident that you can get bit on that bait. So,
and that's just not if you have live scope. Like, you can see bait fish on 2D.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you're getting in the back of your area and you're not seeing any bait fish. You know, either they're up shallow or they've gone, right? So, and if they're up shallow, hopefully you have some good glasses and you can probably see them, right? The original live scope.
Yeah. If they're up shallow and they're eating bait up shallow, they can't hide from you, because eventually something will come up and eat a bait fish off the top of the water. You know, the big fish, they just can't hide when they get up that shallow.
Yeah. Another thing to add on what Brady said, like, if you're in the area and, you know, if you wanted to put like a time on it or something, if you haven't gotten bit in like 20 minutes, that's when I kind of start like And like in this 20 minutes, you've maybe thrown 10 casts with a spinnerbait. You know, you flipped a jig on some stuff. You've thrown some topwater or whatever around. Like you've thrown different things in that amount of time. That's when I kind of start thinking, you know, maybe they're not in this area like I thought they were. And I'll kind of like make a move either deeper into a cove or a creek or something, or kind of you have to refine them every day. They're fish. They swim. They move every day. I don't care if it's the exact same conditions from day A to day B, those fish are going to move in and out just based on it being, you know, dark outside.
Right? Yeah.
So they're keying in on, you know, bait fish a lot. You know, I tend to see that, like, if they're eating crawfish, they'll hang around an area a lot longer than they will if they're eating shad. Mm-hmm. So that's something else to kind of look at. If you do catch fish, you know, was it eating shad? Does he have tails in his mouth, or does he have little tentacles in his mouth? There's a whole bunch of like stuff you can kind of clue in on for sure. But yeah, if I had to put a time on it, just personally, that's only works for me. About 20 minutes of like hard fishing and not getting a bite, I'm kind of like start thinking that I need to make a slight move.
That's something I know I never do enough of is examine the fish. Like that's, you know, I see people online or pros, hey, look at this fish, look at this and that, and look at his mouth and whatever else. I never take the time to do that, especially in a tournament, to kind of, you know, maybe there's some clue you can get. That's something I always forget to do.
Like, especially on the first couple of fish, I always look in their mouth because, you know, a lot of the times if they're eating crawfish, you'll just see two little tentacles, like really, really small. And, you know, you'll miss it if you're not paying attention to it. A lot of the times if they're eating shad, they'll spit it up right by your boat, right? Mm-hmm. So there's definitely look at your fish when you catch them.
So in your mind, one thing you hear people talk a lot about is junk fishing. And to me, that's kind of just like fishing whatever's in front of you, all different kinds of structures. How does that, in your mind, how does that differ from being versatile? Or is it the same thing?
Go ahead, Brady.
I think that I, above all else, I'm just a junk fisherman. And the reason I'm able to be a junk fisherman is because I spent time becoming versatile in different ways to throw lures, different techniques and things like that. None of my success that I've ever had has ever come like planned. It's always just fallen into my lap. And if I had a plan going into some of these days that I've done good in, I would not have found what I ended up doing good with, because a lot of times I've gone through a full week of practice before the tournament and not found a single thing. And Saturday at 10 o'clock, I find that clue, and then I run with that. So, you know, I feel like planning stuff out never has really worked for me. So, yeah, I always just kind of go junk fishing, fish what's in front of you.
Yeah, my hardest part is like just that initial where to start. Like I'll spend like days just like, you know, should I start here? Should I start here? But like what Brady said, like you can't get too dialed in. And, you know, for me being local, like I really don't practice at all. I'm going to practice for Smith that's coming up. But any of these other tournaments, it's just kind of been like, you know, kind of read the conditions and then just kind of go somewhere and start fishing. And it might be 4 hours and you're sitting on a fish, but you'll eventually figure it out. And if you just kind of keep doing a little sample test here and there and make some moves, you'll eventually cross paths with either a pattern or a spot, or, you know, just a group of fish that just happened to pull up right there. You know, it could definitely happen like that. And junk fishing leads you to that. So, mm-hmm. You know, I might go fish like a grass line or something, throw a frog, throw a swim jig, or, you know, a Texas rig or something like that. And I might go fish a laydown or a bluff wall. Like, fishing what's in front of you is really good. And that's just all visual stuff. That's not even talking about live scope. That adds a whole nother dimension of like fishing in front of you. Like literally it's in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Just following.
No, it's like a lay down, but it's underwater and you can kind of see it underwater now. And yeah, you can fish for floaters, but that's not like a reliable way to fish, in my opinion. You will kind of look into that stuff too. Like as you fish, you'll just start seeing fish kind of get either schooled up or more bait fish activity and stuff like that. But, yeah.
So how many rods do you guys carry like in a tournament? Like how many fully rigged out rods? I know I carry a lot.
I do 8 to 12.
Ooh. Yeah, I do 8 to 12. I might fish out of the PA-14 this year. And so I'd like to have, you know, a lot more. I'd like to have like 20 or more at some point. But
20 or more?
Dude, the same way. Like, I never feel like I have enough rods rigged up. And I'm like, well, sometimes I want to carry 2 or 3 jerk baits or something like that. And I'm like, well, what if they're eating a spinner bait? And I'm like, well, that takes up a spot. Because I do like the big black box behind me. So there's 8 standing up. And then I usually have, you know, I have the PA-12. So either I just have 2 stacked up on one side or 4 stacked up on both sides. So that's where I get my 8 to 12. But man, that's
part of being versatile, you know, is you gotta have those baits queued up and ready to go. You know, a lot of my key fish have come from pedaling along and all of a sudden you see a splash, you pull out the right lure and hook it over there and you end up catching that fish. Like you got to be ready. And in a kayak where you're limited with rod space, you know, you don't have time to sit down and retie to throw to that fish that just busted.
Yeah. A lot of the rods are rigged up. What's up?
How many do you carry?
How many rods do I carry?
Oh. Yeah.
Usually, like, let's see, probably 9 on average, just because I don't have enough money to have more right now. But, like, I'd have 2 of the jerk bait I was going to throw tied on to 2 different setups, and then a shallow diving jerk bait, and then like probably 3 different types of spinner baits, 2 different weights of jigs in the same color, just things like that, you know, doubling up on the same lure in like different weights or like different blade sizes or something like that is kind of what I like. But eventually I'll get there, I hope.
How many do you carry, Kurt?
6 to 8. No more than 8 ever, though. I don't like to have them on my deck.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? If I'm switching out rods, I like to be able to have everything behind me. And I thought that was a lot. But, you know, you guys are like 12. And I'm like,
I never think I have enough. I'm always like, I have like my definites. Like, I'll make a little note. I'm like, all right, Smith Lake, I'll have like, here's my for sure's. Here's my maybes, and here's like, maybe, you know, my other maybes.
Your glide, your.
I have to start like taking stuff off my list, and I'm like, I don't have enough room for that. Are they really going to? It's like a whole back and forth thing for like a week leading up to the tournament.
That's exactly how I do it. I'll have like 3 or 4 that are like, I know I'm going to use, but I only end up using 2, right? The whole time.
Yeah.
But I have like, you know, these 2 are going to be prime. These 2 are like, yeah, maybe. And then it's like, maybe. Probably not. I'll never touch you.
This goes in the back of the box.
Oh, yeah. It's literally like number 1, number 2, number 3, number 4. And then it's like 5, 6, 7, 8 across the back.
Yeah.
See, I'm the opposite, Kurt. Like, I try to only bring 8 in case when it goes somewhere real shallow, then I can lay them all on the deck. Like, I try to keep them all down if I can.
Mm. Yeah,
fishing on Gunnersville, like I have them sticking up, so I'm always like, I gotta go into this bridge. It's like, take all 8 out, lay it right here, take these 8 out, lay it right there, and get under the bridge, and then stack them all back up.
Yeah, our stuff here is so, like, speaking of versatile, like all different types of water that you, I mean, even on the same lake, you could go from a creek to main lake to whatever else that you kind of. You have to be versatile, like, within a day, too, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Brady, how did you become so versatile in Nebraska? Aren't they all, like, runoff ponds and stuff?
there's quite a few different types of lakes. I mean, just around me, I've got like a dirty, shallow, rocky lake, almost like a highland, clear, deep lake kind of deal. And then a bunch of grass lakes and sand. And but you can fish any lake. You can pick one lake and fish it a bunch of different ways, you know, and catch fish doing all of them once you figure it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, Alabama would be much more conducive to learning a bunch of different techniques and fisheries. And we don't have the river style fishing up here like you guys do, which that's one of my favorite types.
Yeah.
And I don't get to do it up here. I have to come down there. Like Arkansas. I love Arkansas. I love Dardanelle. It's one of my favorites.
Well, but I told you you could move down here. I'm sitting in your room right now, Brady.
Is that my room? If I didn't,
yeah.
I didn't have this dang kayak shop, I'd be there. Hopefully in a few years. Have somebody working.
It makes it tough here, though, especially fishing local stuff, because it's not only the baits that you fish and the structure that you fish. It's like completely different types of fishing, like river dragging, shoals, stuff like that. And you're out on the lake and the creek guys win or vice versa. It's like you have to, like, even that creek stuff, I don't do most of that. Like, I'll go up a creek with my Hobie, but that's not like creek fishing here, you know? So it's not only the baits and how you fish versatile, it's like completely different styles of fishing.
Here's another way to kind of learn to become versatile. Do what Dan said and go up a river and only take like 3 or 4 rods and, you know, like a topwater spinnerbait and a jig. That's all you need. And just fish those constantly on that same river. And that like, they're unpressured fish for the most part, because bass boats can't reach them if you go to the right place. And then that will get you a lot of confidence throwing that stuff. And that'll, if you go to one that's like, you know, clear and stuff, I won't name it because it's my favorite place in the world to fish, but you can go up there and you can see spotted bass that are close to the state record, just massively giant. And you get to see them with your eyes and see how they interact in their environment. And it's pretty cool. So that's another great way to learn, you know, is go into a clear, shallow water creek that's got some diversity in it and see how you fare up there, for sure. That's a good way to learn. And stay away from my main lake stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Go catch all Luke's fish.
I like fishing so much is because, like, in bass boats, everybody's fishing the same thing because they can't get anywhere. But in kayaks, like, I get to compete against people who are, like, pretty much fishing on a different body of water. They're so far up in a creek that it's nothing like what I'm fishing down lake. So I think that's really cool, because then you've pitted these guys against each other who are the best at that particular style. And I think that's what's really cool about your down there in Alabama, your local derbs, is you have like straight up creek guys and then you have straight up main lakers, and you get to see who's the best at their craft. That's just another aspect to it.
We had a guy in tournament before last. He cash checking a canoe.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Oh, Chris.
Yeah. It is pretty crazy that they call it like a, like, we have some places I tried to convince Steve to come to. I'm like, it's a Susquehanna of the South, man. It's like, that's where you should be. But, you know.
Don't be telling people about that spot, Dan.
I've never been there. That's the thing. I'm not even going to go fish it. I'm be down lake. Even though I know it's going to be one up there, you know. Some of that stuff is tough to be versatile in those big fishing styles, because it's, I don't know, like, it's hard to compete. Like, I can't compete with Drew Gregory. Like, you know, he's has so much skill and experience and reading water and how much dead water there is. It would take me so much longer to break down water that he can look at with his meat thermometer and say, nah, this is trash. I'm going somewhere else, you know. So
this water is only 57.4. I need 58.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, have you seen him pre-fish?
Oh yeah.
He is like 900 miles an hour to respond.
Yeah.
I'm like, he came up from behind me and we were fishing the same water and he shot past me. And I'm just like, wow. How do you even know what's here, man? He's just like, makes a couple casts, like, I don't feel it. I'm like, damn, man, I gotta like work it a little bit to kind of figure something out.
Yeah, he's versatile in that way that Brady was talking about, where he's more versatile in like only having a few lures and like just trying to cover as much water and sample as many things as possible. That's kind of what I've seen from Drew.
Yeah, I mean, he figures it out.
He's perfected his craft. He knows what he wants to do and he knows what to look for.
And shout out to Drew. I'll tell you what, he did a couple of, you know, different, I forget what they call them, shorts on Bass University. He really gave out a lot of information of how he fishes. It would be impossible to do, but I'm really surprised more people don't try to emulate his style. Like,
it's
to
just
the tee.
So hard.
Yeah, but I mean, you can go out there with like, you can buy his kayak, have his stuff. He shows you how it's set up. What he throws, he only throws like, you know, five rods, all braid, a few baits. That's all he does. And, you know, just, yeah, if I didn't have a whole lot of money, I were just getting into kayak fishing, you know, you can get a crescent and a motor and five rods and be able to compete. That would probably be your best opportunity to compete if I were just getting into it. I would, right. If I were just getting into kayak fishing, I'd be doing what he does.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right or wrong. That's, you know.
Yeah.
You can get a crescent. You can get an 11 foot crescent, a CK1 Venture for $1,000, and then put a motor guide with spot lock on there for 40, about 1900. And then, you know, you have like $3,000 wrapped up in this kayak, which is less than you can get into any pedal kayak, really. So, yeah, those crescents are pretty legit.
I'm a huge fan of the XI3 too.
Five rods and reels. It's not like he uses the most expensive gear because he's afraid of breaking it. But
yeah,
I mean, you 3,500. Well, let's say under four, you can be all out, have everything he uses and go out there and try to compete on that level. It's pretty cool.
It's pretty awesome. You can't really beat that.
Yeah, under $4,000. That's for any hobby these days. That's cheap.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
All right. So is there anything else that we're missing with being versatile that people should know?
One thing that I always tell people and I always say to myself is that confidence is king. Even if you go to a lake that you're supposed, like everybody throws red on Sam Rayburn, you know, just because you're at a famous lake that you're supposed to be doing something at, don't try to do what you're supposed to be doing. Do what you do, you know, because your style of fishing probably has not been seen at that lake. So you're already throwing something unique at the fish because it gets pounded all the time, especially those southern lakes get pounded all the time by the same thing. But if you can bring your little nuanced techniques into there and you feel whatever you're doing, you're feeling like you're going to get it, then you're going to get bit. It's 90% mental and the rest is in your head. So that's what that's the most important thing to me, is always being confident in what you're doing.
Tournaments are no place to be trying something new.
No.
Learn to fail fast.
I take that back. Jim Davis did win the first Bassmaster event throwing a spy bait he had never thrown that was sitting in the bottom of his box. Mm-hmm. So I guess there are, you know, exceptions to that rule, but for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part, you want to be doing what you're comfortable throwing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. That it, Kurt?
I think so. I don't have any other questions.
Yeah, that's it. Be versatile. Learn, you know, learn as much as you can. And that's it. But that's really like the probably the funnest part of fishing for me is learn something new, new things, new, you know, really crazy Japanese baits or, you know, just always learn something new and expanding on what you know. It's one of the funnest parts of the sport.
Absolutely. To me, that's what keeps me locked into the sport, that you never truly are master of it. You know, I feel like if I put as much time as I do into fishing into something else, I would kind of get bored of it. Where fishing, it's just like, even on the same lake, it changes and, you know, the new baits come out, the new technologies come out, whether they work or not, you know, it just keeps you going and keeps it fresh.
Yeah. And keeps you spending.
Oh, yeah. These companies do a good job at coming out with something a little bit different. And you're like, oh, I got to try that.
All right. Well, I'll ask that too. One last question. What's a newest bait you bought? I bought those cue ball things, Geek Rack, the cue ball deals. I still haven't thrown them yet. I got the Core Tackle, Wacky Rig. It's like a corkscrew Wacky Rig hook. Really excited. Smith, whenever I practice there, I'm going to be throwing it. But anything else out there new y'all been throwing?
You got any of those Kredges, Chuck?
Yeah, I might have me a couple. But I like the other one a little bit better, the Finisher.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty cool. And I've been experimenting with a bunch of different, like, those straight-toe minnows. There's every company has one now. I've been researching a few different heads. And one that I'm really wanting to try is this new spinnerbait from Dirty Jigs. They have a compact spinnerbait. That thing looks pretty good. Because I like the Mega Bass spinnerbaits, the SV3 or something. Mm-hmm. That looks a lot like those, so I'm going to get some of those when I can find them. But
nice.
If there's something new, I'm probably going to buy at least one of them.
Same here.
Yeah. Got to try everything.
New Mega Bass colors, like, they had one. There was, like, a Tackle Warehouse special. Ordered two of them because I'm like, I mean, I'll use that color. It looks good. But, you know, also maybe it's something that, you know, if they only have 400 of them, maybe I'll have something that no one else has on that lake that day, right? So,
Kurt, how about you? You're sneaky. I'll bet you got something crazy.
Man, I've just been playing with those hover rigs a little bit. And trying to figure out exactly when the right time is to throw them. I've had some success with them, and then I've also had a lot of failure with them where I didn't catch anything. It's a different bait. And when it's, I will say this is like over a brush pile that only has like 3 feet of water over it, man, it even in cold water, it was like really impressive. Like it was catching fish, a lot of fish. They weren't necessarily big ones, but, you know, because I'm throwing a less than a 3-inch size minnow on them. But I've just been really kind of keying in on that. But I'm curious about the baits you got, Dan. I really, like, for bed fishing, I think for that would just be rocking, man.
Yeah. I think there's a time, especially, like, spawn, post-spawn, whenever they're kind of cruising. I think baits like that, like, any other time, I don't think it's going to like overfish or outfish a wacky rig, but because that's my jam. But I could, whenever they're just cruising around and you kind of get that floating bait, I think that's kind of like a different style of fishing that, you know, like you'll throw a jerk bait and it'll sit maybe, or a hover rig, like you're saying, it just kind of floats around. Kind of that's, I don't throw any other baits that just kind of stay in the same water column, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of new to me too, because like the hover rig, a lot of these new baits are like that, right? They're like, they try to keep you in a certain range water in the water column. And it's, I don't usually fish that way. So it's like a completely new way to fish for me.
Yeah.
Do you get those Core Tackle hover, the one that has the lead on it, on the hook shank?
No, I want to get some of those because I like that setup. I am just doing it like kind of, I don't know if you'd call it old school or whatever, but, you know, really small nail rate weights with a jig hook that has no lead on it.
Mm, okay.
Basically.
And you put like a little nail weight in there, you said?
Mm-hmm. Tiny, like 1/32nd, 1/64th or something. I mean, it's, I think those are the two weights I have is 1/64th and 1/32nd. They're itty bitty tiny little nail weights. But the bait again, I mean, it's less than 3 inches that I'm throwing them on. I mean,
yeah.
I know people upsize them a little bit, but I you know, I'm thinking for me, very heavy pressured water type situation to use them in.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Brady, how about you, man? Got anything crazy?
I got some of those Kredj things. I haven't thrown them yet, but I'm excited because the Stunna is like my jam. So, but I don't get a whole lot of new stuff. I kind of found the stuff that I like, and I just kind of run with that. And I mean, I've gotten a lot of new stuff, and then I just have to give it all away because I don't end up using it.
Well, speaking of those core tackle, I got a mess up, man. I haven't caught a fish on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I threw that Kredj a little bit at Holt a couple weeks ago or a month ago. And it's got its time and purpose. If you're fishing like brush piles and stuff, it makes a lot of sense to throw it. But if that's the only time, I don't want to put it in just that one box because like that's when you kind of figure out, oh, well, I should have been doing this the whole time, like whoever. But it definitely has a like a time and place for me right now, but I got to throw it some more to figure it out.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's a cool little deal, I think.
I think
what is it? What is the Kredj? I mean,
it's a jerk bait that goes up.
It's jerk backward.
Yeah. I saw it. My bad. I forgot the name of it. The Kredj, yeah.
It looks like a riser, but it's more meant for actually like fishing like a jerk bait.
Speaking of riser, I'm ready to tie one of them on.
Hey, that's going to be one of my 12.
Yeah. I'm one of my 12.
Getting to be that time. All right. Well, we appreciate y'all being on. We'll give you a chance to shout out anybody who makes fishing easier for you. Chuck, how about you?
You know, definitely my wife. She's like number one in making me be able to even try to fish. She actually really pushes me to go out there and, you know, get it done. I finally had to get a haircut because Lay was so awful. I had it grown out and I was like, and we made a bet. She was like, I was like, okay, if I don't win Holt, I'll get it cut. So I didn't, I won Holt, did get a haircut. And then I think whatever the next one was, where do we fish the next one?
Inland.
I don't know. Inland. I got that one too. And I was like, I can't cut it. But then Easter came up and I was like, okay, I'll cut it. But yeah, she's number one for sure. You know, Dan, Kurt, you guys, you know, I listen to your show on my way to work whenever it comes out. So I was really surprised you haven't thrown duck poop yet, Kurt.
We were talking about that this weekend, about thinking of TRD.
And that probably would have worked on Norman, man. You know, the extra protein that they need and stuff. Yeah. But yeah, you guys are pretty big. I'm not sponsored by anybody, but Bucks Island, hit them up if you're around here and you need a kayak. They got Jackson and Hobie and stuff like that. And Big Chap's really good guy. And then Brady, this guy to my right over here or your left, I don't know. He's been a huge part. I remember when we first met, it was at Logan Martin, and I had broken my graph, and this was like a 5-it, like a Lowrance 5 or something. I didn't know what I was doing back then. I broke my ball off because I hit the dock, and I had met him, or I had seen him in one of the tackle shops, and I saw him again when I went to go put in a different spot, and I asked him if he had that ball mount, and he's like, yeah, man, I got you. Here you go. And then pretty much ever since then, we've been really good friends, and, you know, I'll let Brady shout out his store, but Selects Sale. If you're from anywhere, get it from him. He's top notch dude. He'll set you up right. And I just appreciate all you guys too.
And thank you.
Yeah. Tell us about this shop, man.
Yeah, it's I used to, you know, work on their pro staff for several years. They were in business selling Hobies for probably like 33 years or something like that up here in the Midwest, and went over to get my team boat last spring, and they told me they were retiring. So I've always kind of worked in and out of kayak shops ever since I started kayak fishing when I was like, I don't know, 12 or 13 or something. And I'm like, dang, that'd be cool to own a kayak shop. So we bought a dang kayak shop, and it's called Select Sail and Sports. We just came out with our new online store, so you can order Yak Attack, Boondocks, One Objective motor mounts, motor guide support, you know, amped batteries, like trying to get set up to have everything you need as a kayak fisherman. Then we have Hobie kayaks and Crescent kayaks. I wanted the Hobies because the Hobie is the best kayak you can fish out of, no matter if you're paddling or using a motor, in my opinion. And then the Crescents have an awesome price point to get into it for a really nice kayak that you can save up money and upgrade into a fishing boat like Drew Gregory. So I wanted to get something more affordable to, like, when I was a kid.
And American made right outside of Atlanta.
Yeah. Yep. I didn't have any money to get a kayak. So having that affordable kayak that's a nice thing to fish out of is, I feel, very important to get the youth involved. So, but yeah, it's been exciting. I'm not going to be able to fish as many tournaments anymore. At least for the first few years of getting the shop up and running, but it's pretty cool. I'm excited about it.
Well, congrats, man. Hope you do well. Hope it continues to do well.
Thank you.
Cool.
That's a big All adventure, right. Isn't it, man? Owning your own shop.
Yeah, it is. I've done for work is work on a farm or a ranch or swung a hammer. So I don't know about all this dang computer stuff, but I'm learning.
So you have no retail experience. And you bought the shop.
Boat shop. I mean, I've helped out in kayak shops before, so I kind of know the ins and outs of kayaks at least, but I've never worked inside, so that's a big change in and of itself, which is nice in the winter time because I've spent a lot of days out in some cold Nebraska storms, but we're open from noon to six, so at least then I get to go fishing all morning long before I have to go to the shop.
That's nice.
Man, right on, dude.
Cool. And he'll ship stuff right to you, too. Like, I've ordered a few things from you, Brady. And, yeah, just any kind of questions that anybody watching has about any kind of kayaks, you know, Kurt, Dan, Brady, y'all, they're all good resources. One other store, the Yak Shack, they're really good people. And they put on our event last weekend on Lay in support of MS. And they're moving to my area. So just want to shout them out. You know, they're real good people while we're talking about kayak stores. But yeah.
Yeah, they've supported Iron City Kayak.
Yeah, they support my home club.
We really appreciate them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, appreciate y'all being on. And thank you for sharing all your knowledge. And appreciate everybody listening. We'll see y'all again next week. Later.
See y'all.